This is Radical Love Live, an ongoing series of podcasts and special events where we explore faith outside the boxes. Hosted by Mark Dilcom and Kelly Wilson.
Hey, Kelly.
Hey, Mark. How are you?
I am freaking awesome, as always.
Oh, you're looking awesome.
Thank you.
Very well styled.
Yeah, right. Yeah. My hair is, I'm growing it out a little bit. I'm looking for a look because I realized one thing.
Yeah.
My hair is quickly turning white. By its point.
Yeah.
And I figured, well, all right, I'm going to make it fabulous. Then I'm going to grow it out because I got a lot of it. Because one of the advantages of hair turning gray, it gets a little thicker, a little coarser. Yeah. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to rock this, dude.
Are we going to be able to call you a silver fox?
Indeed, I'm going to be a silver fox.
I love it. I am really excited about our conversation that we're going to have today.
Yeah, we have an awesome guest who's returning, right?
That's right. We have our friend Jay Baker is with us today. Jay is a pastor, an author, and a speaker. He's the pastor of Revolution Church, which is currently based in Seattle, but the you can experience the talks with Revolution Church online on Facebook and YouTube. And you may also know some of Jay's family members. Jay is the son of Jim Baker and Tammy Faye Messner, who you may remember from television and also some recent documentaries and movies
mm-hmm.
about Jay's mom, who was mm-hmm. a fantastic lady.
Amazing lady.
Yep. So welcome, Jay.
Thank
Great
you.
Great to see you today.
Great to be back, guys.
Hey, Jay.
Hey.
So happy to see you.
Thank you.
So first off, Jay, well, let's talk about that awesome set you have behind you. I was watching some of your stuff on YouTube. I was like, that rocks. We need to have a set like that. I just wanted to get
books.
That out there.
And I'll say, so that you know,
he's got,
I mean,
he's got books. He's got explicit words in the background as well.
Yeah, over there. I don't know if you can still see.
Yeah, over there. I saw it, Jay.
Yeah,
I saw
sorry. It. You guys are going to have to blur that out. It's not spelt right. It's the British spelling. This is my house.
No, I think.
I mean, I found this apartment and I saw this bookcase and I was like, oh, yeah, it's awesome, you know? So. I had a little,
it totally fits you. And I love what you're doing, the work that you do, as Kelly was just saying, you know, you're putting it out there and you're proving the future of the church is not tied to a physical, building. It does not need to be brick and mortar. In fact, there's probably a lot of reasons why it shouldn't be brick and mortar. So congratulations on what you're doing with your house church and also teaching some people, which we're going to talk about. Right.
Right. So, yeah, I actually, Jay called me out this morning. I don't know if he realized that he did that, but
wow.
I was listening to you on your most recent talk about Galatians on the mm-hmm. way over here. And the other day I was on one of the social media platforms, as Threads or Instagram or something. And there's an influencer there who's deconstructed and is, you know, often critiques the, you know, evangelical Christianity or Christianity in general. And she gets a lot of flack from mostly like white Christian men who just, you know, feel a need to correct her.
Of course.
And I said to her,
lady,
I was like,
you don't get this.
And I just wanted to be encouraging. So I was like, you know what? Everything needs to be tested. Everything needs to be challenged. If it can't stand up to scrutiny, burn it down. Put a torch to it. And I was listening to Jay this morning, and he was talking about progressives who use language like that.
Oh, I use that language too. Do you mean I just got called out by Jay too, and I don't know it?
Even metaphorically, if we're using the tools that our enemies are using... Mm-hmm. It's very easy to start falling into that trap of like, we're the good guys, they're the bad guys. So anyway, I had to repent on my way over here for even metaphorically talking about putting the torch some of those old dogmas.
Well, it's the idea of like how many people I've met at the MCC whose churches were actually burnt down. And, you know, when I was a teenager, the church I went to mm-hmm. was majority of it was black and you know and talking to them about their history of churches being burnt down. And you know, to me, I think we've got to seek peace. And you know, like I don't like want to live, like, I don't want Mark Driscoll to be famous and all that stuff, but I don't want him to be burnt down. Like, I mean, he has the right to say what he wants to say. And we have the right to disagree, and hopefully we can disagree well. But when we, like, there's a, what was it Nietzsche said? Nietzsche said, when you're fighting monsters, be careful of becoming a monster.
Right.
And so true. So I've seen the past, gosh, 15, 20 years, I've seen the progressive movement, that which saved my life, you know, but I've seen it become more and more like the evangelical movement, and using the same language and things like canceling and stuff like that, and turn into what more of what evangelicals are, like, they're just returning the same stuff, and it's just a lot of anger. I mean, sometimes, like, when we talk, like, I always was interested in deconstruction, you know, but for me, deconstruction is just reading scholarship, you know, reading good scholarship and realizing, oh, what I was taught growing up isn't true. But a lot of times deconstruction becomes like, oh, they're jerks. Oh, I hate them. And they're so bad. And oh my God, can you believe that guy? Can you, you know, and it's like, and we just turn into like, we're just returning the favor. You know, the same things they said about us, we're saying about them. And what it's doing is it's not bringing us together. It's not allowing us to have a conversation. It's not bringing hope. What it's doing is just continuing to divide. It's continuing a circle. So when we just fight with each other all the time, we just have this circle, and they think they're good, and we think we're good. And we just continue this fight. And I feel like if the church is going to exist in 30 or 40 years, we have to start looking at unity through diversity. And we have to not just expect them to be tolerant, but we also have to learn to be tolerant. You know, people, it's so funny, like, a lot of my really, like, justice warrior friends, you know, they're really into, like, the Beatitudes, but, like, they always forget when it gets to the part about loving your enemy and being kind to them. And then, you know, everybody's like, well, I can't, you know, yesterday I had a conversation with a theologian, and they were like talking about, like, it was like a guy holding the sign. It was like, you know, we can disagree and, you know, still be friends or something. Like, what white guys say after arguing gays don't have the right to exist, you know? And so I was on and I was like, is this really helping? You know, is this really adding to the conversation, or is it just reinforcing a stereotype? And of course, that went over like a lead balloon. And that's tough, because I don't feel like I have any place where I really fit in anymore, because I want to be a peacemaker, and because I've taken that little end of the Beatitudes, right? You know, because you have to admit it, like, when I was growing up, evangelicals, like, my mom had a prison ministry, women's prison ministry. The church that I was doing Revolution at for a long time, which was homeless, working with the homeless and feeding the homeless, they were evangelicals. You know, it's like, we forget, like, oh, they are doing some good things, you know, but instead we get so focused on, like, who they're against and their doctrine, you know, we're like, well, they're following the Beatitudes, so maybe we should be having conversations with them. Like, maybe we should go feed the homeless together, and maybe that would give us a chance to have these tough conversations. And then people say, well, I don't want to argue with someone who disagrees with me or doesn't recognize my humanity. And I go, I understand that. And often it takes a lot of therapy to get to that place. And I've, God knows I've had, I've had everything. I've had electric shock therapy. I've had psychoanalysis. I've had, you know, you name it, I've tried it. But also you have to think about, like, what if Dr. King or Gandhi or John Hume, when he came into the Troubles, what if he had done that and said, I'm not going to recognize the other? You know, there would be no peace in Ireland. They wouldn't have the Good Friday Agreement. We would, Dr. King would not exist. I mean, Dr. King would sit with people who would say, call him Dr. Coon, you know, and have to, and still, and she'll show them respect and love and dignity. So I think we just have to reframe how we work with others, because I just feel like the progressive movement is becoming all about being against the evangelical, the conservative movement now. So to me, it's like, well, now we're known for what we don't agree with. And that was what we were leaving the other church for, because they were all about, like, we don't love the gays, or we don't want them at our church. We love them, but we want them to change. And, you know, we want you to not have sex before marriage, and we want you to, you know, so we're like, oh, predestined, whatever. You know, you go like, oh, you know, they just, that's what they're known for. And now for me, like, on the Revolution Instagram, I follow all these like ex-Christian or former Christian or former evangelical, and I just watch. And it's just anger, meanness, you know, and funny things. They put up funny memes, but after a while, you got to question, like, what's the spirit behind this? And is this getting conversation going, or is it just stopping the conversation from happening? And now we're just all like radio hosts of like conservative. And it also makes me feel like we don't believe God. Like we more believe our in our dogma, in our presidents and in our things like this. Like our faith is really in world leaders and not like, I mean, I think the God is the ground of being, like Paul Tillich. So it's really hard for me to say, well, I believe in God because he's a man in the sky or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, it's still like, where does my faith lay? And my faith lays in loving my neighbor as myself, you know, loving my enemy, mm-hmm. and loving God as I understand God with all my heart. And I think loving those people is how I show that. So I can't write those people off. And I guess that's what I learned growing up, is seeing my parents being scapegoated by the left because my parents were too kooky, and the right because my parents were too progressive, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, that was a mouthful, guys.
Which is wild. I often have to be reminded that back in the 80s that your folks were more at the progressive end, but it was the
no one remembers that, but yeah, they were doing shows on penis implants and interviewing my friend Steve, who has had AIDS. Just recently passed away.
Right.
But he became like a father figure to me. But having Steve, who was an openly gay MCC pastor with AIDS, and doing mm-hmm. things like that, my parents never took political, I met J.J. Walker because he was on the PTL show. You know what I mean? I met, all these different people. So we were from the conversation we had earlier. But yeah, so it's like, but it's funny. It's just funny to see how people, we still just have this tendency to scapegoat. And I do too. Like my first thought is when I see like someone saying something horrible, is like, I want to just reach out and love that person. You know, like I want to become I want to be like Die Hard. I want to be like, he's a but he's the best damn cop we have. Listen here, buddy. But you know, I have to think of Dr. King. I have to think of Gandhi. I have to think of Jesus. I have to think of Paul. And I think that's another problem, is progressives sometimes don't embrace the Apostle Paul because of like forgeries of, the pastoral epistles are all forgeries that were written to make Paul seem more conservative. And even parts
like all the ones that have very strong
1 Timothy, 2 Timothy,
ethics about what women should be doing. And yeah,
right.
Those aren't Paul. They're most scholars call them reactionary Paul. Even conservative scholars and Catholic scholars that recognize that, they'll always say, there's a reason. Well, that was a way we used to write back then. I'm like, you pretend to be a dead guy writing to another dead guy, and then do the opposite of what that guy taught, and that was respectable. So we also have to look at things like that.
It was Billy Shears. That's right. That's a very dated joke.
Because Paul teaches us about grace. You know, mm-hmm. Paul takes grace to the next level. And the whole book of Galatians is about trying to bring a community that's divided over religion, Christian religion. And he's trying to rebuke them, love them, prove that he's worthy of being a pastor or whatever, you know, and then also show them grace and try to warn them, like, you guys got to stop fighting each other or you're going to destroy each other. You can respect each other's differences, but you can't force those on each other or you're going to destroy each other. And I think that's why, we see a lot of people like, well, I just read the red letters. I don't like Paul. And I think that's why we also see a lack of grace in like the community.
So, Jay, we were just in a conversation for another episode, and I said exactly what you mentioned, that if we could just live by Jesus's teaching through and I'd quoted the
red letters.
The red letters.
Sorry, guys.
We're all over each other. It's all meant to be. It's all.
And you bring it home like that. It's like, no, there is actually more. And I guess the reason why I do that is because, I do have a bias towards how the language has been, corrupted, changed, co-opted, lost in translations from Aramaic to to Greek to English, and then the multiple translations of the Bible itself that are out there in this world, and just like, oh my God, what is truth?
Yeah.
You though, and watching what you do, I was watching one of your podcasts there on, sure, whatever that thing is that you do on
it
YouTube.
There were podcasts.
Yes, exactly.
We used to put it on a cassette and then transfer it to a CD and then put it online because I had a guy who was just a computer nerd. And I was like, he's like, we're going to put this online. I'm like, dude, that's not going anywhere. You know, but if you want to do
it,
like
6 hours over to dial up.
Yep. Oh, wow. And see what you're doing now is absolutely incredible because the way you were breaking down Galatians, immediately I'm thinking people need to tune into you and watch this because even if you're not a Christian, you know, just outside of that, you are teaching biblical perspective and that is so needed. It is, you know, it's not the same as Bible study. And unfortunately, I think myself included, I have made that mistake. It's like, well, you just do Bible study. No, that all that means is you're just reading scripture and maybe sharing a little bit about it. You actually are taking showing a perspective in a holistic way and putting it into context, relational context that is so important to the time itself and how this person would have done that and expressed themselves. And job well done.
Oh, thank you. Well, Dan, you guys haven't seen this guy, Dan McClellan. He's a scholar. And he's like, you know, he always shows like a video and he's like, and they say a claim and he's like, okay, let's see what you have to say. You know, and he's really big on YouTube and, you know, I've reached out to him some and he's, you know, said, oh, here's some great books to read and things like that. Like, so I reach out to scholars cause I'm an autodidact. I'm all self-taught. So I reach read scholarship. I mean, the book on Galatians that I've been reading right now is like 5 times the size of the Bible. And that's on book a 6-chapter book of the Bible. And it goes deep, deep, deep. And also my best friend's a philosopher. So I read a lot of philosophy and a lot of scholarship. And I've almost taken theology out of it because I think philosophy and scholarship come together as kind of a theology. And so.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then reading like Dr. King or like John Hume and people like that who also really inspire me. And then when you really get into it with the meat of this stuff, you go, oh, this is where, you know, Dr. King got it. And this is, so I would even say that I'm a Paulinian Christian. Like I'm very Paulinian, you know? And so I'm trying to also help bring Paul back into the church because I think we would love each other a lot more if we understood it. And if we were honest about like, there's mistakes in the Bible, you know, there's forgeries in the Bible and we have to like look at that and we have to deal with that.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's not the most popular thing to say because with biblical inerrancy wafting through so many believers' minds that what's there is the absolute truth.
Well, have you met my dad?
No. I can say my dad's a big fan.
Of Jay's dad.
You get it. You know, like, and that's cost us a lot. I mean, my dad's really sick right now. He's been having strokes. I don't know how long he's fit for this world.
Sorry to hear that.
And it's been really difficult to, because I don't watch his show. I keep all that out of it because I want him to be dad. But we automatically come to talking about theology somehow. It always comes up because it's common ground for both of us.
So can we jump to something that you just said? So in our conversation we had with you 3 years ago, you kind of blew me away because in talking about your relationship with your father and how much you loved him. And of course, with your children, you still make sure that he sees them. Like there's no disconnect, even though you may not agree with what he does, but the love of the family is greater than egos or opinions on things, which I was like, wow, there's a lesson in there for me in the capacity. So my point in bringing this up though is the work you do, and you say that you two can't help but have this conversation. Does he understand the work that you do and does he appreciate what you do?
He used to appreciate it more.
We
had about 3 years where we didn't talk after his first stroke. Probably right after we did that interview. And we just recently kind of reconciled, not even really reconciled, just started talking again. I don't even, you know, we had a really come to Jesus talk one day though on the phone, and it was pretty heavy, but luckily I'd taken about a year of psychoanalysis and I was ready for it. But I don't know. Like the last time I talked to him, he said, I think, you know, maybe I told you too much about grace, you know, and all this stuff. And so, you know, and if he's thinking about death, you know, and he's like, I just want you to be in heaven, you know, and I'm like, you know, he doesn't like the fact that I don't believe in hell. That bothers him a little bit. And and he thinks I'm changing the Bible to fit my, you know, to tickle ears. I'm like, Dad, I'm not tickling ears. I don't even know if I'll be able to pay my rent this month, honestly. So it's like, it's tough. And you know, I just have to, I told him, I said, well, Dad, I said, if I get to heaven, I don't know how this comes, but if I get to heaven and they go, oh, we don't know, you're too much grace. I'm like, well, I guess I took all that stuff that Jesus and Paul said too literally. And then the fact that my parents kept forgiving all these people like Jerry Falwell and all these people who hurt them in their life, I guess I just took that too literally. So I'm sorry. And au revoir, you know, and, he kind of, I think that made a little, he laughed and I think that made sense to him. Like, oh, you know, I'm like, Dad, like, you don't realize like in the 80s, this is what you guys taught me. Like when you were in prison, this is the type of love you and mom taught me to have for other people. So, you know, cause my dad wasn't a political evangelical back then. He is now, but, that wasn't his thing back then. So, you know, I think in some ways it bothers him because he knows I'm probably better at scholarship, biblical scholarship than him. And then I know probably a little bit more than he does. And I think that's hard for dads to deal with, you know, because I'm reading all the time. I mean, I have to, I didn't, you know, I've gone to seminary just to sit in classes and take them for fun, but you know, it's like, I didn't get a degree or anything. So I have to continue to study. And I'm like, I'll read Tillich or Hegel or, you know, and that's just almost impossible. Or I'll have to read a book about Hegel, you know, and reading these books and then going on a really deep dive is, I think, important. And I think that's, to me, is what real deconstruction is. Deconstruction isn't saying like, well, they were mean to me, so we're going to just be mean back to them, or that we're going to leave, and so I'm not going to believe this anymore. You know, for me, I always talk to people like that and go like, hey, no, like, study the history, look at the Greek, look at the Hebrew, look at the scholarship behind these books, and when you see them in context, you'll realize like the things you're feeling are correct. You know, that to me is deconstruction. To me, I always thought my whole life was deconstruction, you know, because it's just finding out what the deeper truth is and what the actual truth is and what the customs were at the time. And, you know, Freud wasn't around. We didn't have normal ideas of sexuality. We didn't have, you know, so like all that stuff there is like, well, I don't like the language. Well, the word homosexual wasn't even in the Bible until a certain amount of time.
1946, yeah, there's a documentary about that. Yeah. Go watch the documentary,
like,
folks.
Paul and all these guys in context, you're going like, okay, 2,000 years ago, Middle Eastern guy who was probably a Pharisee, and these folks and the culture they're in, yeah, they might not agree with you. I could say you could probably go to the same area where he is right now and realize that most of the folks in that community would probably be a little bit put off by your belief system. So the thing is we've got to let people be people. We got to let Paul be Paul. We got to let Jesus be Jesus. We got to let these people be products of their time. And what's good, the good news is when you go, oh, there are forgeries, it just makes the news better. When you look deeper into it, it to me, it gets better. It gets more like love. Love never gives up. It never loses faith. It's always hopeful, endures through every circumstance. When you hear stuff like that, you start to go like, I just can't understand why we so strongly ignore. Jesus said, you know, loving your enemies. And one of the things about my mom for a minute, Tammy Faye, it was her birthday yesterday. And my kids were just really great. My kids are 8 and 6 and they put a little, I have a big portrait painted of her and they put up all the stuffed animals and they threw a little party for my mom and I started crying.
Oh, like, oh that's wow. So sweet.
My son was like, Milo was like, Dad, it's okay to cry, you know? And it was just, ugh.
You make me cry.
Oh, yeah.
Poor God.
Well, I didn't stop crying when he said,
No,
I'm just, I've got really sweet kids. And,
sounds like you do.
Yeah, they're amazing, and they're my life, and that's part of the reason why I have to move around the world and do these things. I want to be with my kids, you know, because God told me to go to Seattle and set people free from Mars Hill. No.
That's not what happened.
kids' mom had my ex-wife had family here. Here I am.
And there you are.
Yeah.
God love you, man.
So one of the things about my mom is why is Elton John flew me out to London to see the play that he and his partner David put together and Scissor Sisters did about my mom. And it's coming to Broadway.
Wait a minute. Stop. So I didn't know that. So Jake Shears is behind that in the music of
this? Yeah, he's...
So I'm a huge fan. Jake, huge fan of Jake Shears, the Scissor Sisters.
Well, this will make you very happy. That's who I spent most of my time with in London.
Oh, my God.
And he is the most down-to-earth, normal, loving, compassionate human being I've ever met. His mom was there. I hung out with him and his mom. His mom kept an eye on me the whole time during the show to make sure I was okay. They just loved me. I felt like I had known Jake for years, and you would never have guessed that this is a rock star or now an actor, like a famous, you know, like a Broadway. Yeah. You would never guess. He was just such a human being, such a great human being. And I really love him. And he contacts me every now and then, and we talk and chat. He's sweet, sweet man. The reason they've done like a play about my mom, a movie that won an Oscar about my mom, you know, and I've just finished doing a documentary with a 4-part documentary with Vice. And
that's right. You were out at Sundance for that.
Yeah,
right?
We were.
Yeah.
Okay. So we got to talk about that before we leave. Telling about the reason.
Yeah. Yep. But the reason isn't because, she's a Christian and she's funny and she wears all that makeup. You know, it's because what Jesus said to the disciples at the end of the Last Supper, he goes, hey, I want to give you guys a new commandment, which wasn't new at all. So I would be like, what? Because he's like, I want you to love each other. And he goes, no, I really want you to love each other because the world will know that you belong to me for your love for one another. And so the reason these plays are made about my mother is because she truly loved people, because she could be comfortable in a room full of Baptists or a room full of drag queens. And we need more people like that. And that's why I am called to try to be a peacemaker and try to come in and say, we got to do this and we got to heal these wounds, you know. Or as Paul said in Galatians, if we continue to bite and devour one another, we will be consumed by one another and we will be destroyed.
One thing that we keep seeing right now is that there are people, and it's not just in this country, I think it's in other countries as well, but who feel like their way of expressing their love for each other is to legislate each other.
Yeah.
That it's, you know, like, I'm going to legislate you into heaven. Is there a way that we can kind of get out of each other's way politically while we're still, you know, because,
well, that's why I would really,
like, those guys believe that and those guys believe that, but
I would
in
really
the public space
recommend reading John Hume's book A New Ireland, because he talks about that. He's like, we had to bring Protestants and Catholics together, and how did we do that? And it was unity through diversity, and it was basically the fact, like, no one wins but no one loses. There's compromise involved. And for some reason, Christians don't like that word at all. But we say, like, hey, listen, you know, Mark Driscoll or John Piper or whoever, I don't know who anybody is anymore. I don't even feel like I live within that Christian world anymore. But whoever is saying mean stuff now, you know, we're like, listen, you respect your right to say these things and to believe those ways, but we don't respect legislation. So there's nonviolence reaction. There's things like this, but there's also having tough conversations. But scapegoating and starting whole podcasts about why we think they're idiots is not going to change that. So what we also have to do is we have to have patience. Another thing is we often want it to happen overnight. So rather than taking the time, we just jump to judgment. Because judgment's a little bit easier than being like, I'm going to be patient and work towards this. But if we could get the government to say, like, hey, we got to get the hell out of religion. You know, you can't, mm-hmm. you know, you got to stay away. We can't legislate anybody to Jesus. And we've put religion over humanity, you know, or what was it? Was the, I have wrote a notes here, territory, like that, you know, we'll choose territory over people. And not for Christians, it's theology or dogma over people. And we've got to embrace mm-hmm. humanity. And I think we've lived where Paul said there's neither male nor female, nor Jew nor Gentile, slave or free. I think we often say there's neither Christian nor atheist, you know, and mm-hmm. we need to live in a world where, because the government's job should be bettering our lives, giving us health care, making sure there's roads that are safe to drive on, that our kids can go to school, that we can have a livable wage, we can pay our taxes, you know. So that's the thing, is like getting to a point where we can, and this is like maybe a 30, 40 year project. If you really wanted to start working, it took John Hume 30 years to see peace in Ireland, in Northern Ireland. So it takes time, but we've got to have people who are willing to make the sacrifice and make the movements towards that. People who are willing to say, like, I'm not going to attack my enemy. I'm going to love my enemy. And I'm going to respect their beliefs, even though they're different. It's so weird how we're really good at like religious talks, you know, like, with a Jew and a Muslim and stuff like that. But don't put me in the room mm-hmm. with a neo-Calvinist, you know. And some of those folks of those other religions believe the same thing that the neo-Calvinist believes, you know. Uh-huh, uh-huh. But we're just not tolerant because they're doing it in the name of Jesus. And I think we have to find common ground. And I think we'd have to lay our faith aside, is what, you know, we do too. You know, the progressives do too, because we're like, you guys, you conservatives need to get out of religion, but we're in there too. We all just need to step back and say, how do we let the people live? You know, how do we allow this country to improve the way of everyone's life? You know, straight, gay, conservative, Democrat, you know, whatever, you know, how do we do that? Unfortunately, I don't think any of our politicians are on that rate, but we have to think about different politicians. We have to think about other mm-hmm. parties. But I think the idea of conquest undermines, you know, everything, you know, when it's this us versus them, and it just drives us further apart when we're
agreed.
Like, we got to win.
Agreed. This us, well, for, as you know, Jay, you feel it in your heart. You feel it. I have no doubt. There is no us versus them. There is no yeah. other. It's a we. We're all deeply interconnected. Mm-hmm. There is that oneness. And, you know, not even to get woo-woo. It's just the reality of the situation. But yet we live so well. And that's unfortunately part of the human condition is to other. Yeah, we've been doing this for our many, many, many centuries and millennia, right? And we just see it manifested in so many ways today because of, you know, technology has allowed us to other in ways that we never thought possible. So.
Well, and capitalism, you know, capitalism continues to push us to divide us. And if you look at politics, how these politicians divide us, they go like, well, one group likes gays and one group doesn't. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, next thing you know, well, I love Joe Biden because he did something for the group that I really love. But he's also like helping bombs and wars all over the country. You know what I mean? It's like mm-hmm. you can't, like, now we're becoming one issue voters. Now we're turning our eye towards like, oh, well, you know, we don't ever, like, we're not looking at ourselves. And that's the problem is we've got to self-examine and take a very hard, honest look at who we are and what we believe and where the contradiction is. And some contradictions we have to live with. That's just part of life. And sometimes mm-hmm. contradictions are higher than truth. But there's a lot of contradictions that just don't work for us. And, you know, we're scapegoating the other to feel better about ourselves and also to avoid looking within the abyss that's within us, that lack that's within us, that capitalism somehow promises to fill. And capitalism mm-hmm. really makes money off of us arguing online, dealing with this kind of stuff. And then so you got conservatives say, well, we'll save you from abortion. And so now we're all doing these issues and we're just being distracted because all the politicians have money and war. They all have money and all this stuff. There's very little difference between the two parties. But if you're gay, there's a big difference between the two parties, it seems. You know, so we have to keep that in mind as well. And but we all have to be honest with that. Like, are we one issue voters? Are we this or that? Like, what's going on here? And speak truth to each other. But it's hard, you know. I mean, I feel like when we play into identity politics, we get into trouble, and we us and them, or we put one group above another group, or then we get into the hierarchy of suffering. Well, I've suffered more, so I have the right to say this, and you don't. It's really interesting because when I have conversations under the Revolution Instagram, people don't necessarily know who I am or know what, and sometimes they don't know who I am even when I'm on my Instagram, my Jay Baker. But they don't know my history. They don't know my work. They don't know what I've done with, you know, LGBTQ rights and my work with Soul Force and all these different things. And so it's really funny when you try to bring up this peace stuff and they throwing all this other stuff at you. And it's just what it's shown me is that so many people aren't prepared to disagree well, much less argue well, you know. And if we're free from conflict, usually what happens when you can't have conflict, you go to war. You start going to war and canceling each other. You have to be able to have conflict in life. And in capitalism, it said, no, you don't need conflict. You need a new car. You don't need conflict. You know, you need 100 billion channels. Now we're adding commercials, so pay a little bit more. You know, you don't need, you know, you need this. You know, you need Joe Biden. Mm-hmm. No, you need Donald Trump. You know, they'll save the day. And that's just not. I mean, the world is, it feels like the world is burning. Every day I wake up and I feel like the world is burning. And so when I reach out to these young folks and evangelical, like progressives and like, hey, can we think differently? It's so hard. Like, I've been asked to leave conversations and said, you're not safe, or you shouldn't be here, you know? And I'm going like, but I'm able to give you a perspective that you might not have had because I've been on the other side, you know, because someone was arguing satire with me, you know, and I was like, well, I understand satire, but I've also had satire aimed towards my family as a child. And I know how that felt, that it didn't warm me up or change my mind. So I think there's room for satire. I mean, I love satire. I love Ricky Gervais. I think he's hilarious. But I think these are tough things that we have to ask ourselves. You know, are we just throwing fuel on fire and making more people angry? And why, you know, like I come in and I'm automatically judged because he's like, well, he's not going along with what we're saying. He's a white heterosexual male, so he must be a bad guy. And I'm like, guys, I'm like super snowflake. I'm like, you know, I'm special. You know, I've never voted for a Republican in my life. You know, and people are like, why are you so hard on the Democratic Party? Why are you so hard on the Democrats? Why are you so hard on the left? I'm like, because I always thought that that's where our hope lied. And now it realizes that it's our hope lies in humanity. Our hope doesn't lie in a party. Our hope doesn't lie in even in Christianity. Our hope lies within us being able to see each other as humans and finding unity through diversity and allowing each other to live and let live and realizing that, hey, the government has got to make things right for everybody. Like it's got to make it safe place for all people and not just Democrats and not just conservatives. But how do we, you know, but we're not like, if we keep calling people who are burning books Nazis and or banning books Nazis and things like that, I'm like, I don't like it either. And that's my first knee-jerk reaction as well. But take a few minutes and step back. And I always think like, well, what would my mom say? Or what would Dr. King say? Because Jesus would usually just ask a crazy question, you know? What would Jesus say? The book of the, I don't know what Jesus would say. But I know what Paul, and I feel like I've gotten inside the Apostle Paul's head a little bit. And I feel like I've gotten in some other, you know, Paul Tillich is pretty good. I love Dr. King. You know, I mean, Dr. King was his most unpopular when he was assassinated because he was doing the poor people's campaign.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, these type of ideas are not popular. Yeah. If I wanted, you know, and it drives me crazy because there's times where I'd be like, I was very popular in the early 2000s and I had books and I did all this stuff. And, you know, and now this message just seems to be a message that's not welcomed anymore. And I miss the emergent church. I miss being with the community. I miss having people around, even though it seems like now, like most Christians are, it's every man for themselves too, as well. And like, we're not having conversations with each other who we even love. So it's, to me, I feel like a voice like screaming on the top of a hill, you know, where like I'm trying to ring a bell and being like, you guys, you know, we got to start practicing humanity, and this doesn't happen overnight. So it's just the little things. And so that's why maybe why I confront somebody who's puts up a meme. But usually I will say this, if I'm confronting you, it's usually because I see something really positive in you and I believe in you. And if someone says, well, Jay Baker said this to me, it's usually because I think this person is better than this, or this person could do so much more. And we've got a lot of work to do. But you know, I'm just not the person that people want to hear that from. So it's tough.
Oh, well, I'm not going to let you end that in that way. I'm sorry, because they just don't know.
Yeah, we gotta get your word out there.
Yeah,
I do understand. Like, people don't.
I'm tired. I really am tired. It's tough.
Yeah, people don't want
to. You gotta keep doing it, because you're right. Maybe it feels really difficult, but yet the breakthrough is coming. I'm confident that I have hope. I have faith. And what you are doing, we all need to be doing. So, Kelly, you were going to say something.
I was just saying, like, people don't want to get out of that emotional, the emotional knee-jerk reactions, the connection to, like, I'm in a tribe that is allied against this other tribe, and we all have certain rules. And when I go online, it's hard for me not to get into the temptation of that. I see something somebody says, and I would be like, wow, you're so wrong or whatever. But, you know, you think about like all the uncommitted voters in this recent primary.
Yeah.
That, you know, if somebody's like named uncommitted, got into the campaign, they do pretty well. But there are people who are, you know, definitely like anti-Trump, but they also look at Biden and go, he's doing a lot of the same stuff, or he's doing a lot of other stuff that I don't like. We really need to get out of this binary and do something different.
Yes, we are victims of the binary. And, that's for sure.
We're totally, you know, binary and thinking is good and bad and all this stuff. It just, you know, the no room for nuance and
nuance. What's that?
Yeah. I mean, it's really tough, you know, and I feel like when I'm in, I go to Northern Ireland a lot, and when I'm in Europe, I feel like they have a little bit more room for that.
Yeah, they've figured this out, or at least they're better at demonstrating it. It's because of their culture.
Well, and hearing some of them say stuff like, you know, well, if Trump wins, at least there'll be less wars all over the world. But I'm like, yeah, but then there's going to be like wars within the country. You know what I mean? I'm like choose your war. Petroska. You know, it's like, choose your war. That's how divided we are, you know? So, yeah.
It is. So, Jay, we've got a few minutes left. And one thing that you mentioned, and we'll circle back to it. Talk about that documentary.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
The idea originally came from me and Helen Rollins and Peter Rollins.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
We were all like, hey, let's make an hour-long documentary with philosophers and psychoanalysts. Talking about how your mom was able to walk between these two worlds and bring people together.
Oh, that's great.
Brilliant.
So
yeah.
But unfortunately, that's not the documentary that's being made, but let me finish. So we took it.
Best laid plans.
So they took it. They were shopping things device, media, which unfortunately now seems to be over. They were.
Yeah.
And they go, oh, we love this idea. I'm like, well, we got Jay Baker part of it, blah, blah, blah. And at the time, my dad said he would do it. And then it changed his mind. But they said, we want to do a 4-hour thing on this. We want to go deep. We want to tell the whole story. Yeah. And so what's interesting is that now I think we're kind of telling a story that most people might not know. And they think they know. And it's really funny because there was one of the first reviews that came out from somebody who saw just two episodes. It was the half of it. You know, didn't mention that they only saw half of it, and then made stuff up from things that they had heard or what they had read on Wikipedia. And we actually had to contact them and say, this is not in the film. This actually never happened. What you're saying, you're getting this confused with something else. And so it kind of made me realize, like, there's a reason for this documentary. Dana, mm-hmm. who's directing the film, he directed the Murder Ball documentary, which is really great if you haven't seen it. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, we got to go to Sundance and it was wild. I saw Pauly Shore on the street and I was like, Weasel, you know, and I did. I totally was just like the 90s. That's my generation. But yeah, we got to, you know, go there, talk about the film and promote the film. And I'm excited for people to see it because I think it also does exactly what we're talking about is this kind of scapegoat of each other, this cancel kind of idea, cancel culture that really is just not biblical. If you followed Jesus or Christianity, cancel culture, canceling anyone is not an option. You know, Paul said, if you think you're too good to help redeem someone, you're only fooling yourself. You're really nobody. If you think you're too good to help, and he's talking about helping your enemy, believe it or not, restoring your enemy, because that's also in Galatians. That's the only book I've ever read in the Bible, but it's pretty good. I kid.
I always like that moment in Romans 2 where he's like, you know, they did these evil things and these evil things and these evil things. And then you turn the page and it's like, you're no better.
Yeah.
And you're no better.
Paul can be a little bit tense at times. I mean, he goes from telling each other to love each other to saying, like, I wish my enemies would castrate themselves. I get it.
Yeah.
Not an easy dude.
That's right.
But well worth. It breaks my heart that progressives are missing out on grace. Because my whole life is built on grace. Grace changed my life. The best thing I've ever read on grace is a sermon from Paul Tillich called You Are Accepted. Matter of fact, if people don't want it, you can just Google it and it comes right up. If you don't want to read it and you want to listen to it, you can go to revolutionchurch.com and go to our YouTube. And we have Peter Rollins with his lovely Irish accent reading the whole sermon. Because we did a whole study on it and then we had Pete read it. And so it's there. You can hear the audio version of it at Revolution. And it's just this idea of just like, you are accepted by something greater than yourself, you know, and you don't have to believe more or believe less or even, you know, you are accepted. And I just feel like we miss it out on it when we ignore Paul because people are like, well, Paul was, you know, heterosexist or, you know, or what is everybody, what's the word everybody uses? Homophobic,
like heteronormative,
homophobic. Yeah. You know, and I'm going like, Paul was talking about something different for one, and two, you know, maybe he was 2,000 years ago in the Middle Eastern when he thought Jesus was coming back in 2 years, you know. But the point is let's look deeper into it. And when Paul says there's no male or female, no Jew or Gentile, no slave or free, he's not just talking about salvation. He's talking about like, this doesn't exist. So there's more liberation there than there is judgment. And then, like you said, when you get to Romans 2, Paul says, oh, what horrible people I'm talking about. You are just as bad because you judge them. You know, and it's like, you know, mind blowing. But yeah, so I think the film helps us look into this idea of this kind of when we make assumptions, when we don't look at nuances, when we, you know, just go in there and judge people. And I think, because it's called, you know, it's about my mom, called Better Angels.
Okay.
But you really see a lot. You learn a lot about my mom and dad from people who were there. And I helped book it. So I even booked people who worked for Jerry Falwell and were part of the people of the takeover and everything. So you get to hear both sides of the story. And I think it ended up being really powerful. I mean, there were moments that I was like, can you guys edit this out? I don't really like it. But, you know, but I didn't have that power. You know, everybody's like, oh, he's it's one-sided because he's involved. And like, literally, once we signed those contracts, all I could do is say, I'll help you book. I'll give you the best interviews you can. I'll help you do research. But, you know, it's really, at the end of the day, it was up to the director how it turned out. And I think it turned out beautifully. So, yeah.
Oh, wow. Wild, I definitely hope that it gets picked up soon and we'll be able to see it.
Yeah, I'm hoping to like a Netflix or Amazon or somebody like that. You know, not that I'm a huge fan of any of that, but I do hope they pick it up because I want people to see it.
Absolutely.
Well, yep, we are at time, unfortunately.
Yeah, I would love this conversation keep on going.
Yeah, I feel like I could have like this is
Jay, you have to come back. I mean,
appreciate
back at you, brother, back at you. So you have to come back.
I'd love to.
And let's pick up this conversation because it's just, I love the work you do. Like you are undeterred in showing us that unconditional love is, I don't know, we could actually do this.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I think it's a mix between like punk rock and Dr. King and my mom. You know, there's all those things kind of just got into my heart and I took it really seriously.
Oh, God. Well, Godspeed to you, brother.
Yeah, keep up the good work. We will, we're big fans. We'll continue to amplify you. It was just very, very good to talk to you,
Jay. Thanks for listening to this episode of Radical Love Live, co-hosted by Mark Dilcom and Kelly Wilson. All rights reserved. You can find our podcast on Spotify, Apple, Stitcher, and other popular podcast platforms. Go to RadicalLoveLive.com to learn more about us, watch recordings of our live events, and listen to our podcast. We also invite you to check out what Kelly and Mark are doing by going to our websites. Find Kelly at KellyWilson.com and Mark at MarkDilcom.com. This is Radical Love Live, where we explore faith outside the boxes.